Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio 89.1, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. I am one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Paul Wearson. Hi, Paul.
Well, hi, Susan, and good morning to all our listeners out there this morning.
Paul, it's good to have you back in the studio as my fellow county reporter. In the past couple of years, most of our work as county reporters has been to ride in your 1996 Buick.
Yes, it's an old car, and we visited some exceptional people and places over that time.
Our first was an interview with James H. Andrew in Jefferson, whose railroad collection and donation is the foundation of the recently opened museum at the Boone and Scenic Valley Railroad.
And I remember on that trip you recorded all our musings as we drove down the old Lincoln Highway that day.
Well, we won't be doing that today, but there's still going to be some railroad background. And ever since then, you've been urging me to go east on the Lincoln Highway to the Lincoln Highway Museum at Nyland's Cafe in Kola.
And yesterday, you finally made it.
But I didn't get to ride in your 1996 Buick. Now, you go to Kola every week early, go to the school, and then you eat at the Nyland's Cafe. I think that the reason you do that is a pretty neat story in itself. Why do you go to Kola every week?
Well, I'm an RSVP volunteer with the program Speak Up, and that's a program for fifth graders. It is really fun. Each child writes their own speech on their own chosen subject. There's a timekeeper, a master of ceremonies, a person who does the question and answer session. It involves all the students, and it's really fun. And I've fallen in love with fifth graders. They are fantastic. They surprise me all the time.
Well, you have a chance to say that later. We have a guest here today who needs an introduction and is probably one of the guiding lights for you in your Speak Up program.
Yes, Artie Sangri is here today with us, and I've been working with Artie maybe about 10 years, and she is with RSVP and oversees the Speak Up program. Thanks for joining us, Artie.
Hello, everybody.
Well, why don't you tell us what you do in regard to Speak Up with RSVP, and what is RSVP?
Okay. It's a retired and senior volunteer program, and we have been doing Speak Up since 9+ years. It involves fifth graders, and it's an 8-week program. The volunteer goes in once a week and teaches them public speaking skills.
We went out and interviewed Vicki Wilson at Kolonesco School, the fifth grade teacher there, and that was quite an experience. Do you get to go out to the places where your volunteers go?
Yeah, usually what I do is I go the first day and say hello to Paul and the other volunteers, get the program started. And then I also go on the last day. And, of course, if they need help in between, I definitely go and help them out in any way I could.
Now, how long have you been working with the program?
9+ years.
So you really got it started. Is that right?
Well, I was not the one who started it. It was Kaylin Peterson, my director, and United Way kind of wrote this program. And then we incorporated it. And then it was thrown in my lap, and I did it.
And how many volunteers besides Paul do you have?
I have about 12 volunteers, but that doesn't mean that I have 12 every year. It's plus and minus.
So then there are a lot of schools that you cover with this Speak Up program.
Absolutely. It's Kolonesco, Meeker. In the past, we have done Edwards, Sawyer, Roland Story, Huxley, and so forth.
Well, maybe you can answer a question that I had. We had an experience yesterday when we were waiting for our teacher to come to the interview where we were in the senior high section. Kolonesco has a middle school, mm-hmm. High school arrangement, and the students that Paul works with are in the fifth grade, so he's in that wing. But today we had our interview over in the senior high wing, and as he was walking in the hall, a whole group of students came up to him, and they were, you know, it was like they were seeing their very, very favorite person. And they sang a song and they remembered things they did in the class. It was really beautiful to see that. And so I wondered, now, those students have had that experience in fifth grade, and then Paul is going someplace else next year. What happens to the kids who miss that fifth grade class? But apparently they all get it. Is that right?
Absolutely. It's, I guess, mandated by the teacher. Every fifth grader has to participate.
In those schools where the teachers participate, but not all teachers
Not all teachers participate in the program. We have to have a cooperation of the teacher in order for us to do this program, definitely.
Well, this is a very cooperative teacher. Let's listen to a little clip of her interview with us from yesterday.
I do speak up because it's a good opportunity for students to have outside volunteers come in and meet with them. I also like it because it fits nicely with our Common Core. And we are required to do speaking and listening skills as well as writing, and so they all tie nicely together.
Are there advantages to having somebody come in from the outside?
Yes. The students respond well to outside visitors. I could stand up there and teach them the same thing, but they tend to respond to outside visitors better than the teacher when it comes to different things. And Paul does an awesome job with our students. And so they always get fired up and always look forward to him coming into our classroom. So
what are some of the things that the classes do that are fun?
Well, they start by picking a topic that they're interested in. Anytime students can write about something that they're interested in, that's always a plus. Paul always teaches them about the different kinds of speeches, and so we can refer back to that as the year goes on. This is their first research type paper that they do, so they're always excited about doing some research on the iPads or in the computers to put that into their speech as well.
This is a lot more than a speech class.
It is. It's the writing and it's the speaking and it's the listening, because we talk about being good listeners as well. Paul also teaches them the different parts of speaking so that they can. There's the Masters of Ceremony, so they understand all those roles too. And question and answer and voice monitor and all of those kinds of things. And they all want to participate. So it's great student engagement, which is a very important part of learning as well.
I really like the empowering of the student to pick their own topic. Because we all remember in school when we were assigned things. Here they get some power by choosing the topic. And every day there are nine people who have roles, four speakers, then there's a timekeeper, an MC, someone who counts the oohs and ahs, a voice monitor who waves a speak-up sign if they can't hear the speaker, and then a question and answer person who chairs the room after the speeches are done, and all the speakers line up, and questions can be asked of each speaker. And they love that because they know then that the audience is tuned in to what they're saying, and they're getting marvelous feedback. And then after that, I give them feedback on their speeches. You know, did you make eye contact? And we're very positive. And they will stress a few things they could improve on, but they come out of this reinforced that they can do something that's something, well, it's public speaking. And surveys show that most adults are terrified of that. So if we can have them do that when they're in fifth grade, hopefully that diffuses some of the tension about ever being in front of a group. And to do a speech, you have to organize your thinking. And then what I like about Vicki is really the fact that she fully integrates this program into the language arts and what she's doing. That's really helpful to me. So the teacher here is not being passive, but actually involving the students in an extension of her own curriculum. That's really rewarding for me, because I feel then that I'm making a contribution beyond what's normal in this Speak Up program.
How long does this last?
Well, it's an 8-week program, and the students are involved in an hour once a week. And so we have two groups of fifth graders, so Paul's here for 2 hours a week.
How many years have you been doing it?
Eight or nine years.
9 years,
no.
Yeah.
And I'm very thankful for the program, too, because anytime you can bring outside sources into the classroom, it just makes the students more aware of what's out there. And Paul, being a radio personality, just gives them that opportunity to see somebody that has been in radio, and we always have fun with Paul. So,
no, but the thing that amazes me are fifth graders themselves. I've been at this a long time. The topics range from dumb things my dad did on vacation to a child who talked about breast cancer and revealed that her own mother had passed away just 3 weeks before. And so it's funny. It's tragic. A girl gave a speech on her foster mother, the first person who ever loved her. There wasn't a dry eye in the house, you know. And then I was joke around and say, you could give a speech on anything. You could give a speech on underwear. Well, a boy in Nevada took me up on it. He gave a speech on underwear, the history of underwear, all the way back to the Romans. So fifth graders are always amazing me, educating me, surprising me, and endearing themselves to me.
Is there anything that you'd like to say that we have not mentioned?
I'd just like to thank Artie and Speak Up program and Paul and all those involved in that to make that available to our students free of charge.
Well, thank you very much, Vicki. This was Vicki Wilson at Colonesco School, the fifth grade teacher there, and we had a great interview with her. She told us that her students would be listening at 7 o'clock for the rebroadcast, and probably other people may not know. They can tell their friends that this is live at 7 a.m., but at noon and 7 p.m., you can hear the whole show again at KHOI-FM, 89.1 FM, on your dial. Now, Artie, since we have you here, you can maybe add a little to this. One thing is the program growing? Do you plan to add more schools if you have more teachers, or do you have a balance between the number of volunteers and number of schools?
I would love to expand this program and have it in 100% of the Story County schools. But like I said before, it all depends on the teacher, whether they are convinced on the program or not. And this year, we are doing it in Colonesco, Nevada, Meeker, Gilbert, but I would like to really expand it more.
So if you had more teachers who were interested?
Absolutely. And in regards to the volunteers, I am sure this program will convince a lot of people to help us out with this program.
Well, it sounds really worthwhile, and you could hardly have a more enthusiastic teacher for it.
Absolutely.
Or a more enthusiastic volunteer.
Yeah.
And another question that I had, do you have enough information, do you have any feedback on the results of this when students do go on into high school? Do these skills stay with them? Do they markedly better than students who haven't been through the program, or does anyone notice that?
Well, Susan, what I can really tell you is that after the program in each school, we do a survey, which gives us as a feedback right away about what students feel about the program. And since 9 years, let me tell you, we've been getting all positive responses. Kids tell us that they have increased their confidence level. They have increased their knowledge. I mean, it's amazing. A fifth grader telling us that. And I'm sure this is a skill which cannot be lost.
Yes. It's not something that goes away.
Yeah.
Better than riding a bicycle.
Absolutely.
In our interview yesterday, after we talked about the wonders of the Speak Up program, the conversation went on to another RSVP program, Pen Pals. And could we hear the clip on that, Becca? It's really also a very valuable program.
And RSVP, I didn't know all the programs were out there. And so once we got involved with that, it was really nice.
Yes, RSVP, there's a variety of volunteer activities, and a few folks, especially if they're retired educators, not everyone's comfortable being in front of a group of children in a classroom. And so there are a myriad of volunteer opportunities, which Artie will expand on. But the folks who do Speak Up, I think, get a special bonus because it's what we call an intergenerational program. That means it puts you back in touch with your own youth. That's valuable to me.
And our Pen Pal program through RSVP
right.
is a wonderful program as well. And our students love learning about older people and what school was like when they were in school. And then they get to meet them in May or most of them get to meet their pen pals in May. And a lot of them are from right from our communities, so they have that other person in their corner that watches them at ball games or at music concerts or those kinds of things, too.
Yeah, it's extended family, and that's particularly what small towns are about. Because, number one, you have your parents and your immediate family. And you might have, if you're in a small town, a lot of extended family living around you. But then here comes someone from, you know, like I'm a pen pal here at COLA, UNESCO. Well, I don't know the children. Well, I do in this case because they're in my speak-up class. But for most adults who are pen pals, they meet the child right at the end of the year, the kid they've been writing to all year, and they have their own concept of what that boy or girl looks like. And then the boy and girl, they have a concept of who that lady or that man is, and it all comes together over cookies and lemonade in late May.
Sounds like a much larger program to administer than the Speak Up program. Is that right, Artie?
Absolutely, because when I need to recruit pen pals, it's about 200-plus volunteers I would need for different schools.
And how many schools are involved in the pen pals program?
It's about 5 or 6 of them.
Not so many more.
Absolutely, yeah. Again, I would like to expand this program more in Story County.
But it sounds like with 200, you probably already have quite a few volunteers to keep track of.
Absolutely, yes, yes.
In fact, Paul, what were you saying about your record keeping on Pen Pals?
Well, I have so many. I really have sympathy for Artie because of all the people she needs. So I have at least 1 or 2 in every school, and I have my own file system, so I remember which kid is saying what and who they are, and I keep track of that. And then May is filled with pen pal parties, so I get overdosed on lemonade and cookies.
But you recommend it.
Oh, yes. In fact, I think it's so much fun to talk with the kids through the letter, and I think they write the letter. You know, they're not typing it to you or anything like that. It's one more skill where they can, in an old-fashioned way, sit down and do a pen thing, and then you're doing that too. It's an old-fashioned exchange that the older adult's very comfortable with, and the kid needs to know those skills too. So it's fun.
Well, that brings up another question for me, because I'm finding, as I do so much more on the computer, that I can barely write decently. And I think, I wonder if students are even learning how to do cursive anymore. What do they learn in school about writing?
They're still doing cursive in Roland Story. Not all schools still do. But Artie has a program, too, where there's a lot of, RSVP volunteers do so much. And one critical need I know in talking with Artie is this transportation program RSVP has. That's really important, and that deals mostly with elderly adults. And you might want to expand on that, Artie.
Okay. Transportation program we started in 2010. We help individuals to get to doctor's appointments, pharmacy, and grocery store. It's a supplemental program, and clients need to give us at least 48-hour notice. They need to fill out an application. And then I have a volunteer, driver volunteers who are willing to drive these people to different appointments. We have started doing a background check on the clients as well as in the process of doing that for our drivers as well.
Now, the background checks involve what, their real need for these services or what?
Background check means have they been on the sex offender list? Have they had any criminal background? You know, this kind of minimal check on the clients.
Oh, so it's not on their needs, for example, whether they really, really are disabled.
Oh, no, no, no. And I guess that's the thing which we really cannot check. We just believe their word of mouth. And also, we come to know through drivers their ability to get into the car or not.
Yes, that's very important.
Yeah.
Their ability to get into the car or the ability of the driver to help them get into the car.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah. I really was being a little jocular when I said, are they really disabled? Because I know this is a tremendous need for people who are even pretty able-bodied, because Story County is huge. And if you have a doctor in Ames and you live in Story City or any other surrounding community, mm-hmm. how do you get here?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's been expanding again. We have tons of clients, and we do have drivers, but we would like to have more drivers in our pool.
Do you ever have to turn anybody away because you don't have a driver?
Especially for long distance, like I did get a call for a ride to Iowa City, and that gets really challenging sometimes.
Yes, I can imagine it would, but I can also imagine it's a very great need.
Absolutely, yes.
So that's a program you need more help with. Are there any other RSVP programs that you would like to mention now?
I would love to mention all of them, and we'll be sitting here forever. But quickly, I just wanted to mention that we are having a winter weatherization project on this Saturday, where we go into the homes of elderly, disabled, and low-income families and install plastic on the windows and minor things so that they can save money on their energy bill.
And I'd like to put in a plug for the plastic on the windows. I used to use that before mm-hmm. I changed for my double-hung windows. And what a huge difference it made, not only in my bills, but in the comfort of the rooms. And so that's a very worthwhile thing to be doing. So that's the other big program. Are there other aspects of RSVP that other people administer?
My coworker Betty, she does do disaster preparedness program, and if somebody is interested in helping with that program, they can call us at 292-8890. I don't know if you remember, in 2010 there were floods in Ames, and that's the time when RSVP was activated, and we played a major role in getting things in order and helping individuals.
So would you repeat that number, and is there any website information that we should have?
The number is 515-292-8890.
We will have the website on our website. So when people go on to listen to a rebroadcast of this program on our archives, they can click a little button, and they can, if they click your name, they will get the website for RSVP.
Sure. That sounds great.
Okay. Well, thank you, Artie. It's really been a pleasure talking with you. And what Paul says...
If I learn something, I'm happy. And it's fun to watch fifth graders do that. And I'm always thankful to Artie and the RSVP folks for trusting me in the classroom. And I'll see you again, Artie, in the classroom.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for having me here today.
That's Artie Sanghi.
Volunteer coordinator.
The volunteer coordinator for Retired Senior Volunteers Project, RSVP. Thank you. And after a little traveling music, we will invite you to join us on our road trip to Nyland's Cafe at the crossroads of the Lincoln and Jefferson Highways in Cola.
On the road again, going places that I've never been. Seeing things that I may never see again. I can't wait to get on the road.
Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio 89.1 FM, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our 7-county listening area. I am one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Paul Wearson. We've been talking to Artie Sanghi about the Speak Up program in RSVP, Retired Senior Volunteer Program, that is available in various schools in Story County. Do they have similar programs in other counties?
I know that we, in Webster County, one of our volunteer coordinators is trying to get this program started, and also in Marshalltown. They're in the process of trying to get the program started.
Okay, well, that might be of interest to our outlying listeners as well, then.
Well, going back to the Colo area there, where we do the Speak Up program, one of the perks of going there every week is I get to eat lunch at Nyland's Cafe. In a recent visit, I talked with Sandra Human Kelly, who actually agreed to tell us about the gas station and cafe and motel, which make up the one stop of this historic corner of the Jefferson and Lincoln Highways.
And I have that interview on tape, so let's listen.
I'm the owner-operator.
Yes. And your name?
Sandra Heeman Kelly. And actually, the Nylands Cafe is part of the Reed Nyland site, as it's referred to, which is actually owned by the city of Colo. So I lease the cafe and the motel.
And how long have you had it?
We're in year four with our business. And the restoration, actually, of the cafe and the station was done in 2003. And then in 2008, they restored six of the motel units, and that was added to the configuration.
I love the motel. It's the old mom-and-pop motel.
Absolutely.
That we all remember from the 50s with the probably chenille bedspreads and that sort of
thing. Got little quilts on there, very cozy, and but yet modern amenities. We have wireless and cable, and
you know,
the things people look for in traveling and comfort. Wireless is almost essential anymore. You wouldn't try to imagine how people traveled before they had internet connectivity.
Well, now that the Lincoln Highway is no longer the major east-west highway, people have to come off the new Highway 30 to get here. So do people have much trouble finding you?
I don't think so. I think it's for many people, it's a very intentional stop. We have visitors, if you browse through the guest log, from all the states and actually various countries find their way here and are specifically looking to pay us a visit from either they've heard word of mouth or have done the research. The Lincoln Highway is actually well labeled on Google Maps, so you can type that in as a search and find the path and, you know, attractions that will pop up and so forth. And then the Iowa Lincoln Highway Association has done a fantastic job of getting working with the DOT and the RC&Ds, which manage the Heritage Byway, to get the signs up that really have helped it along. We got those up just in time for the Lincoln Highway Centennial. And then, of course, I've paid for some other advertising signage as well.
And the Lincoln Highway Centennial was last year?
It was in 2013, and we have an exciting year coming up again next year, the Jefferson Highway Centennial. And this is the crossroads of the two. The Lincoln is very well known. You know, there's been the PBS show and a number of wonderful books exploring it. But the Jefferson's a little lesser known, but hopefully that'll be changing with the additional publicity of the centennial. We just had a couple through from Michigan that were traveling the entire length, and they actually mentioned that they were traveling to Lincoln and had stopped here.
Really?
Picked up a brochure off our counter, just like many people do, and became aware of the Jefferson and kind of put that on their list for, let's do that sometime. So they just finished that a couple weeks ago. The Jefferson goes from Winnipeg, Manitoba, and makes its way down to this point, and then it follows its path the rest of the way to end in New Orleans. So it's lesser known just for the reason that back when the roads were being constructed and the routes and named and paving going on, there were associations at that time to sort of canvas for paving the roads and for a particular route over another, and then those associations sort of died out when their usefulness for that those purposes was taken care of. And then in Iowa, actually in Ogden, Iowa, the Lincoln Highway Association at the national level was reborn in Ogden about 25 years ago. So then they had a new purpose to preserve and educate, and their purposes had changed. And that's part of the reason I think that the Lincoln is better known. The Jefferson just reformed its association about 4 years ago, actually in Ames. They had their first international conference. In Iowa, the Jefferson comes down from the Minnesota border following roughly Highway 65, although there's some older routes and so forth that are being documented. And then at the Reed Nyland corner, it makes a curve and goes in with the route of the Lincoln. And they go from here in Colo to Ames following the same route. And then the Jefferson then splits and heads south on Highway 69 to go to the Missouri border. The Lincoln roughly parallels 30 in some parts where the new signage is up. It's actually one and the same, but it's not a given that it's Highway 30 all across the United States. Out west, you have sections where it's following US 50. The numbered highways always come after the named because that, of course, was the Department of Transportation's efforts to regulate and standardize and make things understandable and not have people following signs on poles to figure out where they're going.
Now, this is known as the Reed Nyland Corner.
Correct.
And for those who are listening, there's a marvelous diner here, plus an old gas station with all the old pumps, and then a hotel on the other side.
A motel.
A motel, yes, that's a 20th century term. And inside the restaurant, you know, is our homemade food, which is really an attraction. We just had lunch there. And then also on the walls, you've got a marvelous display of historical matter. You know, all of the pictures and illustrations of the old Highway 30. So if you come to the Nyland Reed Corner, you'll be treated to history as well as very good food.
Sandra, you have a key. Can you take us into
the
gas station?
Let's go in.
As also, we see signs for the Jefferson and also the Greyhound lines, and often gas stations in places like this were also bus pickup points and bus stations.
Absolutely. In its heyday, the Reed Nyland Corner was going full tilt 24 hours a day.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Every day but Christmas.
This is actually a triangle right here.
Correct.
And that curved road must be the Jefferson Highway.
The Reed portion of the Reed Nyland Corner gets its name from Charlie Reed, who ran the station for many, many years. It was open and fully operative until the mid-60s, when the new four-lane came through, of course. He lived right across the road in that little white house, that modest little white house, but he would, you know, not have far to walk across to work, maybe stop by in the restaurant to get some molasses cookies, which, of course, were his favorites. We have the station open kind of on a pre-call basis. We do have a farmer's market during the summer, and we do have a volunteer that has it open during those hours and whenever we're having special events. So it's not open all the time right now, but it definitely has that feeling and smell, too, of as time left it. We have Charlie Reed's desk and his telephone and some of his bus schedules and so forth. The station actually is in its new location. You mentioned the curve and so forth. At one point in time in the 20s, this intersection was an at-grade crossing, and the DOT felt it was very dangerous for that reason. So they looked at possibilities for constructing, I guess, what would be considered an early prototype of a cloverleaf. And so they were, the whole site was kind of threatened at that time, and Charlie Reed sort of went to bat for things and wanted to know what was in the way, and he found that it was the station, so they moved it. Actually, it was located on the other side of the motel and moved it over to this current location.
Very good.
So, and here it's been ever since.
But the one wonderful thing are the old windows, and the old cash registers are here, so many of the old tools, and then there's that whiff of the old fluids, you know. There's a mixture of grease and gasoline, and it's almost endemic, and we're on the cement, you know. And if you just imagine, there's really an area here where you could service a car, a service bay, if you wanted to.
Right.
And it's just a beautiful place to be on a beautiful fall day with actually three gas pumps out front. And I do remember the Royal Crown, and I do remember the EAT signs.
Mm-hmm.
We went to California in 53 and on Highway 66, I suppose, and that was... You saw EAT everywhere. And I haven't seen that for years until I see it here on your benches, you know. EAT. Well, that made sense. You know, it's cut to the chase. EAT.
And the Reed Nyland is known as a one-stop. And for early travelers, that was important because you needed gas, food, lodging. I mean, it's as simple as that. And if you could make one stop and hit all three, you know, all the better. The site historian for the restoration, Lyle Henry from Iowa City, is working on a book on the history of the Jefferson Highway that will hopefully be out in time for the centennial next year. So we're finding out a lot of new information as to the importance of this site. They had done research and at one point found this is the only remaining one stop on the entire Lincoln Highway with all three pieces still intact.
Right?
And the research thus far, to my knowledge, has indicated the same is probably true on the Jefferson. So that's, you know, really up in the ante in terms of what this is all about. you still will see an occasional place that has a station and a couple cabins or a restaurant and a station, but all three pieces still intact. And you know from your travels that a one-stop was very common.
I don't remember. Did you say when it opened? Did they all open at the same time? The gas station, the restaurant?
Originally? Well, the Reeds and the Nylands are related. So it became sort of family ventures as to, you know, realizing as the highway, the Lincoln in particular at that time, was being paved and connected together, that car traffic was increasing.
Sure.
And smart entrepreneurs with the station, then, you know, people would want something to eat. So there was actually kind of a snack bar initially that evolved into a small cafe. When they did the restoration of the restaurant, I think they found 7 additions and reconfigurations. The large dining room that the museum displays are in, I believe, was added in the 1950s. So if you can kind of picture before that time, it was a pretty tiny little place with some booths and, you know, counter with stools and so forth. And then the station, when it was moved as well, you know, they really didn't add on. And then the motel, the evolution there was from allowing camping on the point, that nice trees and shade and so forth, and then small cabins that you may have seen some other examples elsewhere where you had space between them so you could pull your car right up, a source of water because your radiator was no doubt going to need some water. And then, you know, a lot of times you could either travel with your own linens or you could pay a couple dollars and have bedding and towels supplied. And then, you know, later kind of kept going from there. In about the mid-60s, when Highway 30 was expanded to 4 lanes, then the dynamics changed as far as the traffic patterns, obviously. So that it was at that time that the station wound down. And the motel, the Nylands, when they still had it at that time, had converted some to apartments.
The whole interstate system and the exit systems and the signs you see on the interstates, we're all descendants of this idea, the three things you need when you're on an auto trip, mm-hmm. gas, food, and lodging.
You said we couldn't get into the rooms because they're occupied. Number one, how many rooms are there?
Sure. They restored 6 rooms in 2008, and they're all comfortably appointed, I guess you would say. They have a 1 full bed and a shower, Wi-Fi and cable, of course, a desk and, you know, a couple lamps and a nightstand. So they're very comfortable, but they're cozy. They're not, you know, spacious. I know I was doing a school tour and we opened up a room and they all filed in and kind of looked around, and the last little boy to go out said, "There's not a pool here, is there?" He knew, and you know, but he just had to ask.
Now, are the furnishings done in a period or just?
Well, the cafe, I believe the date they were targeting was roughly 1940s. Mm-hmm. The motel has a little bit more of a modern look, but the infrastructure is original to that point. And then there's an additional double cabin unit that there's been some discussion about possibly restoring as well, but they're all the modern conveniences. I know I've had people call to book a room and they say they do have heat, right? You know,
yeah,
they remembered staying when that was, you know, not a silly question.
But now your occupancy in the motel is pretty good then.
Well, we do have some local, you know, projects going on, so we can serve workers in the area as well as weddings, funerals, mm-hmm. family overflow, holidays and things like that, as well as the Lincoln Highway Travelers. I just had a request for, I think it's the week of Christmas, a fellow that has stayed here before, and they want to come back. They enjoyed their stay. And
oh, man. Yeah. I just love it. The Reed Nyland place here, Reed Nyland Corner in Colo, and it's the kind of place for a man my age to get very nostalgic.
It's also a great photo op. We find, you know, motorcycles, new cars, old cars, graduation pictures. Really love the backdrop of the station and the pumps especially. It really is
right?
Just very photogenic. We had several classic car roll-ins was an idea we tried this summer. Just not a car show, not a competition, just sort of a come and go as you wish. And
did you get a good response?
Interesting, just to see
really?
The assortment each time. And, you know, you would think, okay, maybe some people will come every time. But it was it was just a totally different assortment each time, and there was a lot of camaraderie between the car people and so forth. So it it kind of felt like how it might be, you know, on
Well, this place would look great, surrounded by 54s, 57, 58
sure.
Chevys
yeah.
and Buicks and Fords, and that would be so great for, as a photo op.
Sure. We're normally only open till 8 p.m., but for the Rolands, we stayed, had the cafe open till 9, and we had all of the neon and all of the lights on the station, every the pump lights, everything. So
really?
It was a, you know, kind of a rare opportunity for people to do some of that night photography here as well. We do have Lincoln and Jefferson Highway markers on site, original ones. The Jefferson, the Lincoln is right outside the cafe on the corner. I can see it from here. And then the Jefferson is back on our walking path between the motel buildings. And there were two of those found in the area, and I don't believe they've ever found anything similar elsewhere. So the Andy is coming up on the Jefferson, and the site's importance for that as well. So we've had our second tour of people specifically traveling the entire length of the Jefferson this year, and I imagine next year it will be even more so. Last year with the Lincoln Highway Centennial, we had tours from all over the place. We had an early Ford V8 group that left Gettysburg, Pennsylvania on their way to their conference in Lake Tahoe, and we served them a kind of grab-and-go lunch and gave them a little tour, similar like we're talking about today. We had a group of 30 or so deaf motorcyclists. And you mentioned opening the door and walking in the station. There was a common reaction from that entire group, as well as many, just a deep breath in. It's like you want to just, you know, inhale history. We do have a self-guided walking tour that basically covers the whole site. And the one, the panels right outside the station area, of course, tell the story of the station.
I love the end of that, where she tells about the deaf motorcyclists coming in and inhaling history, because that's what you were doing. When you went in, you sniffed and you said what you did about the about where you could put the car to work on it. And the other thing, of course, was the historical markers that she mentioned. I hadn't really paid much attention to them until after the interview, but one of the questions that I had that I didn't ask was, when did they start selling gas there? And right away, there's the marker that says 1923, and then it grew from there. And so there's a lot on the site to see. And I just also wanted to highlight what I'm sure everybody noticed, and that was the trains in the background and the cars going by, because that's, of course, what you get when you're there.
Well, you know, it predates the interstate system, and we take for granted the whole structure today of exits and all the restaurants grouped around the exits, all the chain restaurants and chain hotels. And we look back at this Nyland site and realize this is the birth of all that. You know, here's a farmer who, in the corner of his field near the highway, had the foresight to see this is a business opportunity. And then he starts selling gas. That grows into a few snacks being sold. And then you have probably a service bay for car repair. Then that grows into a restaurant. And that grows into a restaurant and motel. And when I remember, it was such an impressive experience to me going to California in 1953 with my parents, probably on Old Route 66. And there were no chains. Every restaurant had its own personality. There were wigwams and restaurants in the shape of animals. and all of them had a counter and a fry cook. And all those foods we're told today are going to kill us. But every restaurant had its own personality. No chains. It was pre-McDonald's. And you know that each and every restaurant there was founded by an entrepreneur just like this one at the Nyland Corner, and it grew into this tremendous industry. And we take it all for granted now, but when you go to the Nyland Cafe in that corner there between Highway 65 and Old Highway 30, you're witnessing the birth of a whole new form of America, the roadside stop. And in the current restaurant, you know, you walk in there, it's home cooking, by the way. And when we went in there today, or yesterday, all these ladies were playing canasta. Well, in the 50s, my mother played canasta all the time. I hadn't even heard that term for years, and I went in there and said, "What are you doing?" "We're playing canasta." Well, it was like a step back in time there, too.
Well, that restaurant was interesting. As she said, it had been expanded in when they from time to time, and then they refinished the whole thing when they did their renovation in 2003. But it was pretty full. We were able to get a booth, but there, I think by the time we left, all the booths were full. And then when we talked to Sandy, she said, yeah, she made the pies. She got in there early every morning and made those homemade pies, and well, there was a big selection. And I highly recommend the pecan pie. It was really delicious. And all those foods that are perhaps the little high fat, high cholesterol, but they actually had a veggie sandwich, which I did not try. I took a Reuben instead. And it was really obviously very vibrant. People came there to experience it. And I think that that was one of the things that was really most interesting, was it wasn't just a museum that was open. It was a place that people really came to be with their friends, to hang out. It was that kind of a place.
Well, yes, it's a viable business. And I know from just the hearsay and history of what's happened since the restoration, and you look at the wall in the restaurant, there are all kinds of contributors and people from the local communities who made donations to make sure that restoration happened. And since then, there have been a couple of business failures there where people began to, you know, operate their restaurant. But what's happening here with Sandy is that she not only knows the restaurant business, but she has this deep love for Highway 30 and all the traditions. So she's going to make that happen on a long-term basis. I predict great success for Sandy and the Nyland Cafe.
Well, we have to leave Nyland's Cafe now and go down the road to Boone. So let's have a little more traveling music, Becca.
On the road again, going places that I've never been, seeing things that I may never see again. I can't wait to get on the road again.
Okay, and now we have gotten to Boone. And I believe we're at the Boone County Historical Society. We can talk to Pam Schwartz. Pam, are you there with us?
I am here.
Well, you have a very interesting and unusual exhibit right now. And I think it's almost over, but I believe that people would like to know about it so they might be able to get in before it is. So could you tell us what it is?
Absolutely. Our exhibit right now is called Secrets, the Mysteries Behind Unidentified Photography. And what we have done is found a lot of little treasures from our collection that are photos we don't know anything about. They're not identified. Nobody wrote on the back. Nobody told us the story. So we just have a lot of really interesting photographs of different things happening and no idea really what they're about. So they say a picture is worth 1,000 words. So we are inviting the community to come in and look at some of these photographs and in 1,000 words or less, write the fictionalized biography or a story about what's happening in the photograph. The contest was originally supposed to run through October 24th, but we are extending the deadline. So you've got extra time. You can come in and view the photographs. So we're opening the contest until November 3rd. So you come in and you can view, we've got about 70 to 80 photos. Choose one, and then you can either take a photo of it or just, you know, remember it. And then go home and you write your story in 1,000 words or less, and then you send that over to us. You can submit up to 3 entries, so you can choose 3 photos, or you can write multiple stories about the same photo if you have a lot of ideas. And then we'll be reading those, myself and the editor from the Boone News Republican as a guest judge, and we'll have prizes for youth and adult places. They have kind of started pouring in. We actually had, I believe, almost all of the 6th and 8th graders from Sacred Heart get into that, or, you know, enter in. So they came over and looked and chose a photo and all wrote a story. We've had some students from Iowa State University. We've had a few adults. So we've had quite a few entries so far, and I'm looking forward to it.
Well, it sounds like the judging will be pretty challenging, all those 1,000-word essays that you have to read.
Well, the first one that we received, I read to one of our volunteers, and I think we both were crying by the end of it. So I think we'll have some good ones. and it seems to be that people are really picking different pictures. And so I think it's going to be interesting. And then we'll actually be keeping those sort of in a binder, and then we'll be leaving the exhibit up, and people will be able to read the winner's story, both in the exhibit and then also on our blog on our website. For more information, if you'd like, you can go to our website. It's www.boonecountyhistory.org. And if you click the web banner, you'll see the banner for the exhibit, and you can go right to the rules. You can email us at director@boonecountyhistory.org or call at 515-432-1907 to get more information.
Well, thank you very much, Paul.
And what I like about this is it fires the imagination of the writer to come up with a tale to go with that photo. That's a fascinating thing, and I'm sure those children really love that because kids have such a vivid and unbridled imagination. I bet they really took this and ran with it.
Yeah, some more of those fifth graders. Well, thanks so much, Pam, and good luck on your selections.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Now, we have one more announcement before we close out. Our last announcement is also a preview of next week's Halloween show. We have to announce it now because it's taking place this weekend, a week before Halloween. It's Back from the Dead, 2014 Halloween hike, put on by the Story County Conservation Board on October 25th, Saturday, at McFarland Park from 5:30 to 8 p.m. Hour-long hikes depart every 10 minutes, so there are lots of opportunities, and not very large groups should be in. Registration deadline is Friday, October 24th, Friday. Children under 12 must be accompanied by an adult. Dress for the weather and wear comfortable walking shoes. Costumes are encouraged.
Well, now, thanks for listening to our special seven-county edition of Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. This is 89.1, where we explore the people, stories, and events in the outlying space of our listening area right here in central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts for today, County Reporter Paul Wearson, together with my co-host, Susan Franson.
Today, we've covered some of what's happening in a couple of towns on the Lincoln Highway, Colo and Boone. And now it's time to invite you to let us know what's happening in your town. Right now, our best source of information is local newspapers. But we're looking for music and drama, for your voices. So please join the county reporters by emailing khoiradio@gmail.com with county in the subject line. We'd especially appreciate your name and phone number if you have something to tell us. Or you could call 515-292-2878 and leave a message for the county reporter. Guests you've heard today have been Artie Sangi, Vicki Wilson, Sandra Hoyman Kelly, Pam Schwartz. Local Talk is engineered by Rebecca Brown.
Music you heard today, On the Road Again by Willie Nelson from the CD The Essential Willie Nelson. Our theme song, always, is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, Ballad of Kate Shelley.
This show airs at 7 a.m., but will be rebroadcast at noon and 7 p.m. today. It is also being streamed live on khoifm.org. You can also listen to all of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org, where you'll find an archive for all the Local Talk shows we've produced since we went on the air in 2012.
Now, if you enjoyed this show, tell your friends and help us find the stories you'd like to hear. And don't forget, you can give us your feedback either by phone at 515-292-2878 or by email at khoiradio@gmail.com with county in the subject line.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 515-292-2878 or at the email khoiradio@gmail.com. Your participation as audience is what makes KHOI possible, and so do your financial contributions. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.
Yes, see you again on the radio.